Hold your head as high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, maybe no one else will tell you, so remember that you are black gold, black gold.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Allie Irving for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Oprah Daily. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Daily. This is a long article today, The Best Books of Spring 2026, from a trad wife time travel thriller to Emma Straub's latest romp on board a boy band-themed cruise ship to a revenge plot led by an already headless Anne Boleyn. These unmissable reads will remind you why you fell in love with reading. These reviews were written by Charlie Burlock and Marion Winnick, and this article was originally published March 11, 2026. Have a spring fling with the budding blooms on some of our favorite branches of literature, novels, memoirs, and story collections bursting with creative energy and fresh ideas. As the epic snow and ice of a tough winter finally melt, and what poet Dylan Thomas called the force of the green fuse drives the first bright flowers, it's a glorious new season for the passionate reader. Whatever your preferences, this list has something for you, from comic novels and satires, to literary memoirs and domestic thrillers, to atmospheric stories of American communities, Jewish, Asian, and Afghan. Really, maybe you don't have to choose. You've got till our beach reading roundup at the start of summer to read them all. Number 1, American Fantasy by Emma Straub. Grab your lanyard and leave your dignity on the gangway. The best-selling author of All Adults Here and This Time Tomorrow is back with a premise that's as wickedly funny as it is achingly earnest. A themed cruise that traps the aging members of a late 80s boy band with 3,000 sequin-clad middle-aged women who have been making out with their posters since middle school. Throw in an open bar, take to the open sea, and let the scream singing begin. Newly divorced, newly empty nested, and nearing 50, Annie begrudgingly bought her ticket to appease her sister, envisioning a nostalgic, if a bit cringy, bonding trip. But now her sister is landlocked with a broken leg, and Annie is sleeping in a twin bed across from a purple-haired, knee-braced repeat cruiser, facing down for 4 days of costumes and meet-and-greets with a dread usually reserved for root canals. Then the lights go down, the first chords hit, and she feels something crackle to life. Not the teen fangirl she was, but the adult woman she could be if she let her own fantasies steer. Straub has a blast with the shipboard absurdity, but she grants every character, including the men being watched from 1,000 angles, a layered inner life. A fizzy escapist thrill ride with real insights on the isolation of celebrity, the community of fandom, and the liberation of middle age. Number 2, The Beheading Game by Rebecca Lemon. Half historical fiction, half ghost story, this jaw-dropping novel about Anne Boleyn opens with Henry VIII's executed queen already dead and buried, and where she is just as amazed as we are to find herself returned to consciousness and ready to wreak revenge. Climbing out of her coffin, she can see the first item on her agenda will have to be reattaching her severed head. This and all the adventures that follow takes us into a vividly realized version of 16th century London, as dirty and stinky and full of shady characters as can be. Fortunately, she makes the acquaintance of a shrewd bisexual prostitute named Alice, whose sense there is something very fishy about this woman, with the strange silk collar fitted about her throat. Doesn't stop her from pulling Anne out of one jam after another. If you loved Wolf Hall in print or on screen, you'll enjoy the rather different versions of Henry, Cromwell, Thomas Wyatt, and Jane we encounter here. And Lemon's writing is as lovely as her imagination is over the top. Number 3, Bad Asians by Lillian Lee. A social media satire from the author of Number 1 Chinese Restaurant, the novel shares the same title as the viral video that blows up the lives of the four young people whose friendship it documents. after Diana Shang, Justin Yu, Errol Chen, and Vivian Wang graduate from college into the economically parched landscape of 2008, all four end up marooned in their childhood homes in North Potomac, Maryland. Also back in town is Grace Lee, a classmate who has footage of them she taped in middle school, and now is wondering if they'd allow her to make a documentary about their stalled lives. They agree, not ever imagining the humiliating and disastrous ramifications when Bad Asians becomes a national sensation, as they unwittingly become party to cruel but infinitely delectable caricatures of themselves. They then come up with an idea to reclaim the narrative that goes so wrong they end up not speaking to each other for years. For all the fun it has with stereotypes, this sharp send-up of internet culture is serious about its characters, whose well-developed interior lives make them fully real. Number 4, Widby by T. Kira Madden. A serial child abuser is murdered, and the women whose lives his crimes upended, from his now adult accusers to the mother who can't help but love him, narrate the wreckage, each voice complicating the last and detonating every simple narrative of victimhood, predation, survival, justice, and revenge. Fresh off reality show stardom, Lindsay King learns that Calvin Boyer is dead while touring to promote her best-selling memoir, which details his violation of her and other girls she never met years before. Birdie Chang is hunkered down on the remote island of Whidbey, trying to ride out the media frenzy from a book that reduced her to a racist caricature and her assault at age 9 to a consumable good. Mary Beth is hobbled by grief for a son the world insists is a monster and desperate to solve a murder that authorities seem to see just as retribution. The debut novel comes from an award-winning memoirist who has written about her own childhood sexual abuse, and that lived understanding gives the book its rare mix of sensitivity, nerve, and precision. She makes everyone's motives legible and their humanity unmistakable without letting anyone off the hook. You finish wanting to reread it immediately, not just to trace the mystery's intricate clockwork, but to hear how each character's voice reverberates differently once you understand the contours of their world. A genuine masterpiece. Number 5, Dandelion is Dead by Rosie Story. Poppy didn't plan to catfish a man on a dating app by pretending to be her recently dead sister, and she definitely didn't plan on falling for that man who thinks he's falling for Dandelion. What starts as a grief-fueled moment of reckless curiosity turns into a wildly original rom-com knot, and untangling it is as squeamishly suspenseful as it is unexpectedly heartwarming. We ache for Jake, the blundering divorced dad who thinks he's met the woman of his dreams, until we get to know him better and learn that he's just as flawed and flailing as Poppy, only in completely different ways. The real suspense isn't just whether Poppy will be found out, but whether two people with jagged edges can fit together into something that holds. The novel shines a light on common grief experiences that aren't so commonly depicted. The misguided attempts to reconnect with the dead, the ways that trying to numb your own pain almost inevitably leads you to hurting someone else, the sheer messiness of it all, while still being a delightfully feel-good read. The masterful pacing and vividly realized characters make it hard to believe that this is Story's first book. Number 6, True Crime by Patricia Cornwell. As Cornwell's most famous fictional creation, forensic pathologist Kay Scarpetta comes to the screen for the first time in a film starring Nicole Kidman and Jamie Lee Curtis. Cornwell's first ever memoir pulls back the curtain on the turbulent life that has fueled her best-selling crime fiction. Not long after her glamorous, unstable mother burned all her three children's clothes, she drove them up to North Carolina, wildly planning to drop them off with evangelist Billy Graham. Cornwell was a victim of sexual assault in both childhood and in her early days as a journalist, experiences that exacerbated a profound mistrust of the world, but even as it wreaked havoc in her personal life, her obsession with evil and malfeasance led to the 43 bestsellers she has penned to date. If you've ever wondered about how crime writers manage to dream up the mayhem they write about, this book is an excellent window into the process. Number 7, Yesteryear, by Caro Claire Burke. A tradwife influencer who's built an empire, posting pioneer purity, 6 kids, a cowboy husband, a rustic farm, and an army of staff carefully cropped out of the Instagram carousel, wakes up, transported to the world she's been cosplaying. It's 1855, and the gender roles she preached online become punishments she has to live. It would be easy to turn this premise into a smug, I told you so satire, and Natalie, a cartoonish punching bag, but Burke doesn't take the bait. For all her privileged blind spots and, ahem, selective representations of her lifestyle, our anti-heroine is admirably sincere in her faith and uncomfortably compelling in some of her critiques of contemporary feminism. We can't completely dismiss her, which raises the stakes of her entrapment and of the book's broader inquiries into traps of modern womanhood and the politics that exploit them. Bottomless raw milk on us, if you can guess the ending's final twist. Number 8, Now Then, by Morgan Radford. Inspired by her own Cuban family history, NBC News anchor Radford makes her fiction debut with a dual timeline story of a mother and daughter, Marisol and Lily, delivered with swoon, suspense, and geopolitical bite. Lily's story begins in 1991, when her parents drop her off at Harvard and her mother hands her a letter that opens the door to a revelation of painful secrets that will take many more years to fully share. We hear the story firsthand in alternating chapters that reveal Marisol's harrowing experiences as a teenager in revolution-torn Cuba. Meanwhile, in the 90s timeline, Lily finds her footing in Cambridge, becoming close with her Korean-American roommate and falling in love with a British Indian postdoc, though neither can quite relate to the intensity of her reaction to the Rodney King verdict. Both women's stories are shaped by cruel twists of fate and amazing lucky breaks as the narrative tumbles forward to its thrilling and redemptive resolution. Number 9, Judy Blume, A Life, by Mark Oppenheimer. What is it about Judy Blume that makes her iconic to generation after generation? As Oprah's book club author and superfan Tayari Jones explains to Oppenheimer in this engaging biography, you never love a book the way you love a book as a child, the way you'll never love a boyfriend, the way you love one at 13. This account of the life of the author of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, Forever, and Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing is infused with the spirit of the forthright, resilient optimist who wrote those books, from her middle-class New Jersey childhood to her life as a wife and mother, including her own sexual awakening in the freewheeling 1970s, to the brutal series of rejections she faced after she started writing at nearly 30. Blume broke new ground in young adult fiction by valuing realism over moralizing and by addressing menstruation, interfaith relationships, and teen sexuality. As one of the most beloved authors of all time, she has been a powerful warrior against censorship. Another superfan, Molly Ringwald, reads the audiobook. Number 10, America, A Love Story, by Camille T. Dungy. America, A Love Story, begins with a threat. Don't make me send you outside to find a switch. The poem's narrator recalls how switch was the word her grandmother's anger reached for when she needed me to act a different way. The instrument in her hand when she insisted, this hurting me more than it's hurting you. As a little girl, she didn't understand, but now she thinks she does. America, the collection's inaugural poem concludes, go get me my switch. More than a decade in the making, the acclaimed poet's electrifying new collection arrives just on time, offering a version of patriotism capable of meeting the present moment and carrying us through to a brighter future. A love for one's country is not abstract, but intimate and painfully tough. clear-eyed about the country's violence and contradictions, terrified by what's at stake, and desperate for it to be better. Written from the thick of mothering while black in America, the collection insists on both tenderness and accountability. Dungy traces how history lives in the body and in the day's logistics, making pregnancy's dangers and caregiving's brutal math concrete, without allowing exhaustion to cloud out the beauty. Number 11, Dear Monica Lewinsky by Julia Langbein. A middle-aged woman confronts a formative, unsettling romance from her youth with unexpected guidance from Monica Lewinsky, recast in Langbein's singular novel as a modern saint. Monica's divine presence and commentary is woven through the story of Jean Dornan, a 45-year-old New Jersey court translator who has become consumed by memories of her 1998 affair with a professor, the same year as the scandal of the president and the intern. With Monica as her co-pilot, she revisits the intense summer she spent at a medieval art program in France at age 19. Now, Jean is able to see her passionate attachment to the handsome young professor who led the program through the clarifying lens of time and distance, and it turns out he actually kind of ruined her life. Langbein's prose is a sharp, witty meditation on female longing and male authority. Number 12, Enormous Wings by Lori Frankel. When we meet Pepper Mills, her children have moved her into a retirement home where she is quite surprised to find herself making new friends, falling in love, having sex for the first time in decades, and getting pregnant at 77. Pepper feels quite certain she could not and should not have another child. Her youngest is 43, but she lives in Texas, where abortion is no longer an option. Many around her see her pregnancy as a miracle, but like the character in the Garcia Marquez story the novel is named for, a very old man with enormous wings, this miracle has come in a package that is hard to embrace. Pepper's doctors, Pepper's children, Pepper's boyfriend, and soon, thanks to the press and paparazzi, the entire outside world, all want to tell her what to do. Only the fearless, funny, and endlessly inventive Frankel could have written this one-of-a-kind yet amazingly down-to-earth book about a woman's right to choose. Pepper is not the only pregnant character in the novel, no matter what that choice might be. Number 13, Brawler by Lauren Groff. If you only know Lauren Groff as the author of novels like Matrix and The Vaster Wilds, you're in for a treat. Returning to her most lethal form with her first short story collection in 8 years, Groff proves she's still at the top of her game, and then she rises higher. The 9 stories in Brawler capture ordinary lives at moments of rupture and transcendence. In one, a group of women, connected by a long shared history and not much else, sit vigil at a friend's deathbed, drinking peach schnapps and sharing stories of the worst thing they've ever done. In another, the screw-up scion of a banking dynasty is exiled to his family vacation cabin to dry out and falls into an affair with a much older townie who drains the entitlement from his veins. Brawler's characters get painfully humbled, sometimes spectacularly so, yet the mood of the collection is unremittingly life-affirming, glowing with descriptions that will make you see the world with new wonder. Trees that turned to bronze and copper, then stripped themselves skeletal. A derelict house, a breath from letting the weeds muscle it back into the earth. And shot through with moments of grace that would make even Flannery O'Connell jealous. Number 14, Good People by Pat Mina Savitt. This is one of those novels where you know right away that a mysterious, unspeakable something has happened, and you are simultaneously terrified and desperate to get the details. Set in the Afghan community of Northern Virginia and told exclusively through interviews, statements, and news clippings, it revolves around a beautiful high school student named Zora Sharaf. After an extremely sheltered and almost obscenely entitled childhood, Zora has broken away from her micromanaging family to make her own rebellious choices. As friends, neighbors, and relatives share their perspectives on the family's past and present, conflicting views emerge from one page to the next. Were the sheriffs a loving clan living the American dream, or was their gleaming surface just a front for something much darker and messier? And what exactly happened to Zora? This skillful debut is both a bated breath thriller and a richly atmospheric portrait of an immigrant community. Number 15, I Hope You Find What You're Looking For, by Busrat Mezgebi. This intriguing debut explores a different mid-Atlantic immigrant community, the Eritrean diaspora in Washington, D.C. It's 1991, and the news from home is exciting. 3 decades of armed struggle for independence from Ethiopia is nearing a successful end. 13-year-old Lydia is the daughter of a former freedom fighter, Elsa, who now sells hot dogs to tourists on the National Mall. She's raised her with the help of an older friend who lives in their apartment building, Mama Zudi, who earns her living baking and selling injera, the traditional Ethiopian flatbread. Their household grows by one with the arrival of 19-year-old Bereket, a cousin sent over from Ethiopia to complete his education. Under Bereket's influence, Lydia begins to push back against Elsa's frustrating refusal to tell her anything about her own past and Lydia's martyred father. Meanwhile, Mama Zudi explores a relationship with a well-heeled widower, but doesn't forget her entrepreneurial and culinary dreams. Told with wit and vivid detail, this is an engaging portrait of vividly drawn characters on the brink of transformation. Number 16, The Calamity Club, by Catherine Stockett. 17 years after her blockbuster debut, The Help, Stockett is back with a second historical novel set in the South. This time, a nearly 700-page book, so immersive, exciting, and downright fabulous, you never want it to end. In 1933, with Prohibition sputtering out and the Great Depression deepening, Oxford, Mississippi clings to its traditions and hierarchies, even as privatization nearly levels everyone. At the Lafayette County Orphan Asylum, 11-year-old Meg, labeled one of the unadoptable big girls, has a rare experience of kindness when she meets a new volunteer staff member named Bertie Calhoun in town to beg for help from an older sister who married rich and left her and their mother behind in the sticks without a backward glance. Bertie will also cross paths with a striking woman named Charlie, who has a checkered past and a daring scheme to regain control of her future. Will Meg ever find out why her mother gave her up for adoption? Will Bertie get the money to save her home? Will Charlie get her life back on track? It could not possibly be more fun to find out. Number 17, Life, A Love Story, by Elizabeth Berg. From the best-selling author of more than 30 beloved novels, including the 2000 Oprah's Book Club pick, Open House, comes another work of surpassing sweetness. At its heart is a very long letter from 92-year-old Flo Green, who has been told she only has weeks to live, to Ruthie, the dear friend she loved like a daughter, and to whom she is leaving her house and everything in it. The letter, as Flo puts it, an autobiography in things, in which she tells Ruthie the origin and importance of some of the items she will find in the house, from a plastic toothpick holder to a particular squat coffee cup to a torn dollar bill. This last letter is the key to a difficult secret buried in her backyard and the heart of her marriage. Excerpts from the letter are interspersed with vignettes of Flo's experience in those final weeks. Another day, the wealth of it, and her secret for perfect corn on the cob. This gentle story of appreciation for the people and things that make up a life will renew your spirit. Number 18, The Oracle's Daughter, by Harrison Hill. This true crime cult story opens with a scene straight from an action movie. In 1999, 26 six-year-old Sarah Green bolts from a desert compound run by the paramilitary sect that raised her, and that happens to be led by her own mother. From there, the Oracle's daughter reads like immersive, on-the-ground reportage, charting how a small idealistic community corrodes into a regime of cruelty, its practices so outlandish they'd feel invented if Hill didn't render them with such concrete, lived-in specificity. Hill uses the story of this one isolated group to tell a much larger history, showing how the desires that drive cults to choose one's own spiritual destiny, to follow a charismatic leader rather than established order, to cross into new territory and begin a new order, are the same forces that shaped the nation's origin story. He draws a clean line from founding era separatist heat through Mormonism, Shaker mysticism. Yes, Anne Lee, recently revived on screen by Amanda Siegfried, makes a grand appearance. Hippieism, and inevitably, Trumpism. You come for the propulsive mother-daughter nightmare and the granular portrait of a survival in a closed world. You leave with a bracing sense of how mainstream the fringe can get. Number 19, This Is Not About Us, by Allegra Goodman. The best-selling author of Iola and Catterskill Falls scales new heights with her 11th fiction title, a layered portrait of an American Jewish family told through interlocking stories. With wit and precision, she captures the way relatives wound and sustain one another, managing a large family tree of characters with skill. The saga opens as one of the family's matriarchs, Janine Rubenstein, lingers in hospice, her slow decline exhausting her children and grandchildren. Her older sisters, Helen and Sylvia, fall into bickering as they keep vigil, winding up in a fierce dispute involving an apple cake. The quarrel splits them apart just when they most need connection and haunts the family months later at a bat mitzvah, where a tense, unresolved divorce and a possibly inappropriate new romance add fresh strain. In another chapter, Janine's son Steve, newly unemployed, stumbles into ghostwriting and learns that readers prefer comforting nostalgia to harsher realities. Goodman refuses such consolation, instead offering a sharp, compassionate exploration of love, rivalry, money, faith, and the often confounding complexities of kinship. Number 20, Underwater, by Tara Menon. In a luminous debut that moves with the speed of a single-held breath, a young woman braces for the impact of Hurricane Sandy while being constantly pulled back into the undertow of memories from the devastating tsunami she survived as a child and that her best friend did not. In Thailand, as little girls, Marissa and Ariel form an instant, all-consuming bond. Their friendship turns the coastline into a private kingdom, equal parts beach freedom and hotel room intimacy. The girls know all the reefs, mantas, by name, and all of each other's secrets by heart. Flashing between Thailand in 2004 and New York in 2012, the novel shows how grief behaves like weather, returning without warning and changing the air in a room. When water makes you think of someone, there's no escaping them, Marissa reflects as Sandy's forecasts pull Ariel's absence closer. What lingers is not disaster, but devotion, love refusing to sink. We have run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Daily. I hope you enjoyed it, and please be sure to listen next time. I'm Allie Irving, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Oprah Daily is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.
Hold your head as high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, maybe no